Okay, well, first let me tell you, I appreciate this very much. I know you...
Well, if I can be of any help to you, I'd be happy to oblige.
Well, you certainly were. I'm sure a lot of people, baseball fans, have never heard of you.
I know that.
And, well, that's not right.
I'm aware of that.
You were an excellent ball player, an excellent hitter, and have one of the greatest strikeout records in the history of the game, and
yes,
I think...
as I wrote, yeah, I'm surprised that somebody picked it up.
Well, I've been aware of it for some time, but I thought you were dead. I thought I had read someplace that you had passed away. And you know, I figured that was a shame. It would be nice
well,
to talk to you.
I could say, you know, the rumors have been surely out of order.
Exaggerated, huh? Well, I was just looking through the baseball guide here about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and I was looking at your record again, and then I saw at the top it says you were born, but it didn't say you died. So I looked up your address, and by golly, you're still around.
Yes, I'm. Well, I could be a square, but I'm.
Well, you had evidently marvelous bat control. The most you ever struck out was 19 times in a season.
Right. I never made 20.
And your rookie year, only 17 and 635 at-bats.
Yeah,
you know, that's a week's work for guys today.
I know what you mean.
Why did you have such a good eye and such great bat control?
Well, when I was in college, I could hit the long ball pretty well. And then I got into professional baseball in Wheeling. And we played 6 days at night, only on Sunday did you see the daylight like you have today, the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided if I was going to advance myself, I better have a batting average more than a home run hitting average. So I decided at that time, you know, you didn't move. If you didn't hit... around 300 in the minors, they didn't care how many home runs you hit. They weren't looking at that much.
Right.
They were looking more at your batting average and whether you were able to play every day. Those are the two things that would determine whether you'd move along in an organization such as the Yankees,
mm-hmm.
which I was brought up in. So before I was sold to Brooklyn, but. I decided then to try to meet the ball, and I guess I cut down on the bat a little bit. I had a little bit of the bat hanging out the bottom of my hand, so I had better control of the barrel of the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's a matter of eyes and muscle control. There on, but I always try to get a piece of the ball. I didn't believe in, if you notice, I didn't get too many base on balls either.
Right.
Which is another thing. I believed if we were going to play, the idea was to hit the ball. And that's where I try to apply it as best I could.
Well, you were still had about twice as many walks and strikeouts through your career, which is
yes.
Pretty good. How many of your strikeouts, I mean, with the eye you must have had and the bat control you must have had, you must not have swung at too many bad pitches. How many of your strikeouts would you say, what percentage would you say were swinging third strikes?
I'd say very few. Most of them were calls.
Yeah, I would have to think that
mm-hmm.
borderline pitches were,
yeah,
maybe...
I guess, not when it was a borderline, I was swinging. No, I wasn't ordinarily... I try to get a piece of the ball, whether it be one way or the other, whether it be trying to pull it. But as I got a little long into Major League Baseball, I was tended to hit the ball more to the opposite field. And it wasn't until I got through and talking to Frank Frisch one day, he said, Bud, you got to learn to pull the ball. He was then doing broadcasting up with the Braves when I was playing for Stengel. And that was around 1941. And I decided to learn to pull a ball again. I had done it young when I was younger, but as I say, when I got into night baseball, I decided to make sure I got a piece of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And Then I started the puller ball. With the Yankees, it was a pleasure because I was able, I finally got into where I could pull the ball, and then I could go either way. I could go to left field or right field. So
it didn't seem to faze you whether you were trying to pull it or not,
I could run pretty good, so I was able to get some bunts in there, too, and some, I guess I legged out a few here and there.
That always helps.
Mm-hmm.
Where'd you go to college?
Manhattan College in New York.
And you played ball there?
Played basketball, yeah.
When did you sign? You signed with the Yankees originally?
Yeah, well, yes. Well, I signed them when I got through college in 1933, and they sent me to Wheeling that year. Then I was, I hit about 332 there, and then they sent me on to Norfolk, where I had a very good year. I hit about 360 and broke the league record for stolen bases with 56. At that time, that's before you had any of the boys of the different color in there, because didn't have too many, I guess, were stealing bases. But once the black boys got in their way, but it held up for 20 years in the Piedmont League. So,
mm-hmm. Well, you still, in the time you were in the major leagues, bases were not being stolen except by one or two guys.
When you weren't allowed to.
Yeah.
You were told when to go. I was just look at this Coleman over there with the Mets, and I laughed. They said they give him the green light, and he's broken up more rallies for them.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Thrown out, but he says, well, I'm told to steal base here, but they don't. When I played, the manager told you when to steal.
Well,
that's what he got paid to do.
Yeah, the manager's paid to manage, that's right.
Yeah.
These guys have got to think, too. I mean, they just can't run because they're fast. They've got to...
That's the trouble. If they will apply themselves to a little thinking... I remember talking about thinking. I think one of the best stories, which happened to me in my first year at Wheeling, Jack Sheehan, who later became the in charge of the minor leagues for the Cubs in about 1948-49 when I was managing Newark for the Yankees. I was playing for him down in Wheeling, and it was my first year out. And we were about three or four runs behind, and I was on first base, and I thought I saw the steal sign. And I took off, and I was thrown out from here to the wall or whatever you want to say, far enough. And Jack was a playing manager, but he was still coaching at third base, and our dugout was at third base. So when I'm thrown out at second, I have to come by him because it's still less than two outs. And I walked by, and Jack said, "Hey, Bud, what happened?" I said, "Gee, Mr. Sheehan, I thought." He said, "Stop right there." I said, "What's that?" He said, "Don't go to thinking, you're weak in the ball club." So I learned a lesson right there that I better watch for the signs.
Make sure it's there.
Mm-hmm. But I see so many signs missed here in this baseball that people just gloss over. When I played, you'd be fined.
Mm-hmm. And guys running through the stop sign at third base, like the coach, why is he there if they're not going to pay attention to him? Yes, I agree.
But getting back to the strikeouts, it was the control of the bat that I, as I said, I didn't hit too many home runs because of that.
Uh-huh.
And my job, I figured, was to get on base if I could, and that's all I try to do.
Where'd you bat in the order usually?
Well, I was always up front. I'd be with Brooklyn, I was third, fourth. I hit the first year, I think, because we didn't do too well. I was all over. I think I drove in 80-some-odd runs.
82 runs, yeah. Good
and,
year.
Which it didn't happen after that, but they generally kept me in around the fourth, from fifth on down, and then sometimes leadoff.
You would seem to be an ideal leadoff person.
A lot of people thought so, and Others, you know, they disagreed, but...
well, that's what makes
the game. All I did was... I had a job to do, and I did it as best I could.
Well, that's all anybody can do. In 1940, you set a National League record, or equaled the National League record, for most consecutive hits.
Yeah.
Now, somebody in the American League, I think, has topped that, but still...
Yeah, I can tell you who it was, a fellow with the Red Sox. He's got 12.
Jopo, was it?
Huh?
Was it Walt Jopo?
No. It was before him.
Pinky Higgins.
It's just a matter of names and a matter of age and remembering. And he was the manager of... I can tell you... it'll come to me if I was on long enough, but...
Was it Mike?
Great fellow. I played against him and managed against him in the minor leagues.
Was it Mike Higgins?
Yes, Mike. That's who it was.
Okay.
Mike Higgins. Right. Yeah.
Good third baseman.
Great. And a great fellow. Great person.
Do you remember the streak of 10 hits?
Mm-hmm. Somewhat. You know, when you're doing it, you don't think about it. You
right.
just keep going and going as far as you can go. And... when it's over, then somebody tells you. But I hadn't given it a thought while I was doing it, no.
Well, I guess you can't.
I think of three different towns or something.
And you had one walk in between there.
Right.
Okay. I have read somewhere or heard somewhere that you asked to be traded from the Yankees system or get to another system.
Well, eventually. With Lou Gehrig playing there, what else would you want?
Yeah.
Well, I had nice friends. The fellow who signed me, Paul Critchell, was one of the finest men you'd want to know. And of course, the Yankees were looking for a home run hitter, too. And they knew I wasn't hitting home runs in the minors. I was getting a good batting average. In fact, talking to Lou Gehrig at in the evening at one of the events we attended here in New York City, because both Lou and I come from New York City, so we would run into each other every once in a while. He said, they're talking about you taking my job. I laughed. I said, hey, don't worry about that. I'll never take your job. I said, not the way you play. And I said, all I want to do is get to the major leagues. And in talking Paul Critchell, I said, yeah. I said, I think I can play in the major leagues, and you can make a deal for me, fine. See, a lot of people forget I had broken my leg in Columbus
mm-hmm.
the year before, in 1935, even though I hit about 335 or something like that. I was hitting about 350 when I broke it. And I guess they figured there was some damaged goods there, but the Brooklyn Club made me... go through some doctors to make sure that the leg was all right. But again, the Yankees weren't sure, but they didn't need anybody. You also had George McQuinn, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He was in the organization at the same time. So you had two pretty good first basemen ahead of me. And and they made a deal, and they got Johnny McCarthy and Buzz Boyle, who they traded for Jimmy Gleason. And that was one of what's his name's big deals, George Weiss's.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he got I think $60,000, and McCarthy, which he got $75,000 from the Giants. And then he got another $75,000 for Gleason that he had traded for Buzz Boyle. So he ended up with $100,000+, which at that time was a lot of money.
Sure, well, it's a lot of money today, too, isn't it?
That was one of his big deals. In fact, I think that was one of the big things that he got his reputation on, being a smart operator.
Yeah, evidently so. And really basically all for you in the first place.
Hmm?
And basically all for you, I guess.
It came down that way, where it turned out to be that, not that it was for me per se, but the deal worked out that way.
Yeah, excellent deal.
Well, a fella says, that's how you get your name in the paper, I guess.
Well, it sure helps.
Someone else makes the deal, it makes you look good.
Well, you played marvelously for Brooklyn, and then they traded you to Boston. What'd you think
of
that?
Well, they brought Camille in there to hit home runs. You see, you're reaching back here. You got an 80-year-old guy here trying to remember. McPhail, Larry McPhail, wanted a home run hitter, so he brought in Dolph Camilli. And Dolph was a home run hitter. You know, it's funny you brought that up because I got looking at my record myself, and I said, geez, I only played 71 games in the third year after hitting 300 2 years in a row. If that happened today, I think somebody would be hollering, screaming at somebody.
Yes, indeed.
And you're finishing 7th and 8th. That's what I'm getting at.
You pinch hit an awful lot that
year. But you're finishing 6th and 7th.
You pinch hit an awful lot that year.
Yeah, that's right, ain't it?
Yeah, and pinch hit very well.
I think I got 9 out of 10 before he put me back in a ball game there one time.
Wow. And they moved you to the outfield, and you...
Well, of course, Grimes and I had our problems.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Grimes did not like Mr. Stengel, and he knew Mr. Stengel and I were friends.
So oh, boy.
It didn't work out. I could tell you stories about that, but I don't like to louse up anybody, I guess.
No, there's no reason to talk. I have no interest in saying anything bad about anybody. I understand what you're saying, though. Well, you played for Casey Stengel twice.
Yes. Well, he told me... In fact, to give you a nice little story of how Casey was, he was one of the nicest people, and he was a good baseball man, I'll tell you that. He was not the clown that people thought he was. In 1936, the winter of 35, the trade was made for me to go to Brooklyn, and I think Sam Leslie, they traded back to the Giants. From Brooklyn. If you check this record, I think you'll find this to be so. And I had the year, as I say, I was hitting about 328, about 320, I guess, and I ran into a real bad period right toward the end of the season. I went about, I don't know, 20 or 25 times for and this happens, and
hello?
I got you.
I'm sorry. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, well, it happens once in a while.
There's a brain...
Maybe I talk too much.
I don't think so. Okay, go ahead. You'd had a real bad spell and your average dropped.
Yeah, and as I say, we're on the tail end of the season, and I guess we only had a couple more games to play, and Wade Hoyt and I went in a hotel in Chicago. And the Edgewater Beach. I was just trying to remember. Things come back. And we went in to have a beer just before. We had a midnight curfew, and we had our beers up at the bar, and Casey and his wife were sitting down at a table. So got up to leave with just before about 5 minutes to 12. We finished our beer and we're heading out. And Casey yelled, "Hey, Bud, come here." He let Wade go on his business. And so I went over and he said, "Sit down." So I sat down with Mr. and Mrs. Stengel. And he called the waiter over. He said, "What are you drinking?" I said, "A beer." I said, "Fine. You ordered whatever beer you want." So he says, "Listen, I owe you something." He said, "You may not know this." He said, "But nobody in the Brooklyn organization ever saw you play in Columbus in 1935 is where I played. I was on option from the Yankees to the Columbus Club, which was part of the Cardinal organization.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I had broken my leg. And he said, most people didn't know this. He said, but nobody in our organization saw you play. He says, but I called up all my friends in the American Association, and they said to sign you. And he said, you made the deal stand up. And he says, I owe you beer. But he was that type of fellow.
I understand from everybody who's spoken of him that everybody liked him.
Yeah.
When you went to Brooklyn, I mean, sorry, when you went to Boston, the year that you had the 10 consecutive hits, you had a horrible year for you. What happened?
I'd have four hits and then nothing. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry. The thing is breaking up a little bit.
That the year I had four hits and then nothing, and I know I had one year that was the year I hit 234 or something.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
Your average was over 300 when you take that year out.
I know it. But that was, in fact, JoJo White, who was then playing right field for the, center field for the Giants, he was having the same type of year. You'd get four hits, and then you'd go 0 for 4 for the next 4 days, and then you get four more hits. You just couldn't put anything together. And we used to commiserate with each other, and it was fun just to talk with them, to know somebody else was in the same boat as you were. You know, misery loves company.
Oh, yes. Well,
it did happen.
You certainly came back from it well.
Yeah, well, I figured it was one of those years, and I guess you're entitled to one out of four. And,
sure.
And the other thing was that, you know, we, in our own way, figured if you have two or three good years in the major leagues, they'd keep you up there for another couple of years. But then the war interfered, and then nothing I could do about that. Of course, Ed Barrow said to me when I had to go into service, and I thought we had a first baseman for a couple of more years. But
were you drafted?
Oh, yeah, I was drafted, but then I beat them the punch. I signed up in the Navy where I got a commission, so I figured I didn't go to college for nothing. I ought to get something out of it, and I think I could do a little thinking, so I became an officer in the Navy. But another little cute story that you'll get. I used to play against Bertie Tebbets when he was up in Providence, and I was at Manhattan. We used to battle each other every year. And it was about time for me to go into service. I got a letter from Bertie, and he was already in the service. And he told me, he says, if you have to go in the Army, he says, let me know, and he says, I have a spot for you. Which I thought was very nice, very thoughtful. But I never used it because I went in the Navy.
Yeah, well, I think given a choice, the Navy's got to be the best choice.
Well, I figured if I had to go, I wanted to be clean, neat, and not into the mud.
Right.
You need that.
You played in the World Series just before you left.
Yeah, in 42.
Yeah, that must have been pretty exciting after the...
Well, it was until I busted my thumb in the third game trying to bunt, and I could bunt fairly well.
Yeah, that was my next question. Why'd you only play three games? Yeah, okay, so you were injured.
Yeah, the first time at bat... Now, here's a very funny story. Nobody's ever picked it up. Joe McCarthy never bunted the first time in the first inning in his life that I know of. If you check his record, I know when he managed.
Mm-hmm.
But Crosetti led off. I had been hitting eighth down in St. Louis for two games, and I ended up with 3 for 7, or 3 for 8. And now we come up, and he moves me up to second behind Crosetti.
Mm-hmm.
Crosetti gets on base. I don't know whether he got hit or got a base on board. Ernie White is pitching, and he's got me bunting. And I think I could bunt pretty good, but by golly, it's a game of inches. The difference between where I had the top of my thumb and the bat was about maybe a half inch, but the ball just caught it and busted the top of that thumb right off. It was my throwing hand, so.
Oh, boy.
That put me right out of the series.
Did it heal up all right?
Oh, I can feel it, but it, yes, oh yeah, yeah, it heals. I can use it and everything else. It was only a little tip, but it, I couldn't throw.
Yeah.
Because it was my throwing hand. If it had been on the other hand, I'd have been able to play.
Right, I see.
So I had to bring Jerry Pretty in to play first base from then on. And so I was out of the series. That was the end of me. So then we lost the next, we lost that game and the next three.
Yeah.
Next two. It was,
right.
But we won the first one and lost one out there, and then we lost the next three in New York.
When you went in the service, were you tempted to come back to try to play ball when you got back out?
Oh, I did. What? And I'm not going to get into that. I just rather leave that alone.
Okay.
I could get very... Well, you know, I'm not one to say, hey, I didn't get a fair shot. The heck with it. I'm not going to say that. I'd rather just let it go. It just happened, that's all.
Okay, well, yeah, I don't want you to say anything you don't want to say, and
yeah,
nothing is gained from at this point, anyhow. Okay. Well, while you were playing, who was the best player you saw?
Best player I saw?
Yeah.
Well, I got to categorize it. Of course, the best player I ever saw was Babe Ruth.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and the reason I say that, I put it in three different categories: home run hitters, outfielders, and pitching.
Mm-hmm.
He could do it all.
Yes, he could.
Nobody else could. Some of them could do the hitting. Some of them could do the hitting and throwing. Babe could do the throwing from the outfield. And but the best hitter I ever saw was Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And the best ball player, actually, other than pitching, was DeMarge, by
yeah,
far.
I understand. He was marvelous.
He's just something else. He was just great.
Yeah.
Great to watch. Great to play with.
Yeah, I bet he was.
Yeah.
He was, unfortunately, retiring just about the time I was learning about baseball, and I never got to see him, but my father told me how wonderful he was.
You missed it.
I did get to see Williams,
though. Poetry in motion, as we used to call it.
That's what a lot of people have told me.
And well, you know, he never looked like he was trying. He was always there. When the ball was hit, geez, he's gone. And he had those long strides. And shoot, he'd be there before you knew it and make the plays.
Yeah, I'd love to have seen him. Who was the toughest pitcher on you in the time you played?
Well, you know, I always laugh at that because they were all tough. There was nothing easy.
That's right.
But there was nobody that I thought was, Actually, the toughest pitcher I ever saw, and I only saw him in spring training, was to see the ball, to catch it up on the way, because I didn't see him enough, was Red Ruffing.
Mm-hmm.
I only played against him in spring training. And I saw, I hit against, the best they had in the National League, Dizzy Dean and Hubble and you name them. And, but for a ball that would catch up to me so quickly before I was ready, he had a delivery that looked like a very easy motion, and all of a sudden the ball was up on you. And I only had a hit against him once in the in spring training, and I thought to myself, geez, this would be tough to hit against if I had to do this every day or every time. But I suppose if you saw him a couple of more times, you'd sort of pick up on it and be able to catch his windup and everything, and where his release would come from. That's what you'd be looking for.
You know, he was marvelously successful for a long time.
Well, he sure was.
Uh-huh.
I tell you what, one of the funny stories about it, which is a great story to me, and when he got quite sick, We get it through the alumni news and the Yankees. And they told me, so I decided to write them a letter, and I never forgot it. I was working out with the Yankees when I was at Manhattan College, and the Yankees were playing the Athletics, and Lefty Grove was pitching for the Athletics. And I don't know who was pitching for the Yankees, but it was a 1-0 ball game, a 0-0 ball game, going into the bottom of the 9th inning. And the Yankees got a man on second base. And McCarthy sent Ruff up to hit. And boy, he hit the first pitch. He almost took Grove's rear off in the center field with a base hit to win the ball game. So knowing Ruffing was sick, so I wrote him, I said, you know, one of the great things that I ever remembered about you, I said, I know you could